here we go. I'm ready to roll today.
Oh,
I'm feeling good.
Okay.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. Welcome to the Heights Unedited Podcast, a podcast featuring real conversations about real life, where we dig deeper into the weekend message, as well as answering your questions on faith, culture, and life. My name is Todd, aka the Bald Eagle, and I'm here with Pastor Ben. But I heard on Saturday night that Noah introduced you to preach as Benihana.
He did.
How do we feel about that?
Well, it's okay. He said it was a pet name, so I wasn't pumped about that.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, a little
nickname makes sense.
Nickname would have been appropriate. Not the first time I called Benihana. Not very original. But I have nicknames for all those guys back there.
What's Noah's nickname?
Little No-No.
Little No-No.
Yeah, yeah. Simon's a little Simey-Wimey.
Okay.
Mine aren't very creative.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're dogging on him for not being original, and those are yours.
But here's the difference. I didn't do it in front of 450 people on stage. So mine are like behind scenes just for fun.
That does make a little more sense.
Makes a little difference.
That's good.
Or they were until just now.
That's good. Well, we have a great show today, and I'm so excited for all of our viewers and listeners, and I want to thank all of our viewers and listeners for being a part of what we do here. The show wouldn't happen if you didn't view or listen, so thank you for that. It also wouldn't happen without your questions. Please submit any questions that you have, unedited@heightschurch.com. You can email us those, and we would love to answer those questions. We have some great questions today, but before we hop into those, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Are you a dancer, yes or no?
Short answer, no.
Okay, so please explain to me why I keep seeing your face all over things in this town about something called Dancing with the Stars. Dancing for the Stars? How does it, what is it?
Dancing with the Stars.
Okay, well, what the heck is that and why are you doing that?
Well, what it is a fundraiser for Boys and Girls Club. All the proceeds go to the Boys and Girls Club. And I think they take care of like over 350 kids. It's half of their annual budget. It's a big fundraiser. Why am I doing it?
Yeah, that's really what
I must really love my wife.
Okay.
This is,
so she roped you into it?
This is my nightmare, literally. I have two left feet. I think the last time I danced was in middle school, and that was just the sway. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But my wife's classically trained. This is her like wheelhouse, her sweet spot, and it's hard to say no when she asks you all lit up with energy.
Okay. Yeah. So your wife is professional dancer, professional dance instructor, and you just got caught in the crossfire.
Yeah. So my prayer that I need is like to remember she's the pro at this and I should have little to no opinions and just do as I'm told. So,
okay.
I don't know. She wants to do the tango, I guess. So
that sounds hard. Can we expect the worm from you at any point during this dance?
Well, the sprinkler, the lawnmower,
okay,
the light bulb.
Yeah,
so I got some in my back pocket. She's gonna be pretty surprised.
Okay, so if you listen, this is definitely selling tickets. So you're definitely gonna get people that want to come see this thing just to see you dance for that. But no, I mean, I had to ask you about that because you're a brave man, braver than me, because I don't know that I would go on stage in front of all these people that paid to see me dance.
Yeah, no, this really is my nightmare. I'm not exaggerating. I can't think of anything worse.
Good. Well, I'm glad that that's happening to you and not to me. And so good that we get to talk about it here, you know, with a bunch more people listening.
Yeah.
So now they
It'll
all know
be
about
good.
It.
Once you learn the steps and you practice it, it's not till September. So we'll practice it a lot. We'll be fine. I just right now it makes my stomach turn.
That's good. Well, I can't wait to see. Yeah, it does. It's really good. And one thing I do know, and I've never even seen you dance, you're definitely a lot better a preacher than you are a dancer. And so we're going to hop into your message in a moment. But first, we do have a question that we are going to get into. This question is submitted from Julia. Julia asks this. She says, in the Old Testament, it rattles on endlessly about who begat who. Do we need to know this information? Why are the begats in there?
Is begat, is that a French bread?
Yeah, exactly.
The thin loaves, cut a little butter, maybe a little salt.
Why are those in the Bible?
Or this baguette?
French, I think so.
Something like that, you know, I think they're in the Bible because you have lineage and genealogy, and it's super important. They map all those things out. I think from Abraham to David, you get 14 generations. From David to the exile, you get 14. Exile to Jesus. But, you know, the family line is important. And the family trees are important. And I think it just points more to, especially when you look to the genealogy of Jesus, just how much of God's grace is woven into yeah. that family tree, which is full of misfits
yep.
and people you would say like, oh, this is part of
I would say bloodline. The family tree of Jesus highlights yeah. God's forgiveness and grace more than yeah. anything else.
Yeah.
You look at that and you're like, what good could come from that?
Yeah.
Which in reality should be all of our responses yeah. to our life. What good can come from that? Well, nothing on our own.
Yeah.
But when God orchestrates the story, man, like Jesus came from this line of misfits
yeah.
and, you know,
yeah.
mess ups. So.
Yeah. And I think it also is important because it just points to the trustworthiness of God that he says it's going to come from Abraham and he says it's going to come from David's line. And like, so you have to have that genealogy. You have to have that tree that you can follow back all the way to see that, man, God cannot lie and he's faithful. And then it just magnifies and amplifies his grace in the tree. And it's a lot like our family trees. You know, you got a lot of crazy uncles in there and crazy aunts and just all sorts of relatives that are like families are hard, man.
Right. Yeah. And I think we have to realize and remember that the Old Testament is the Jewish scriptures, right? This is the Bible for Jews, for Israelites. Up to that point, we look at it as just a part of a bigger picture. Well, for them, for somebody who maybe is walking on the earth during Jesus's time, what they had as the scriptures was what we call the Old Testament, right? The Jewish Bible. And so when they are looking at that, it helps the Israelites understand their history. It's a book of their history.
Yeah.
They don't have Google. They don't have the things that we do to just like, they didn't have, their history class was the scriptures.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so what we look at and we see the begats in the Old Testament specifically are tracing their history, the Jewish history, the lineage of their own Jewish history. Even to the tribes and where they came from, why they ended up the way they were.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to understand that that's what where like for an Israelite, for a Jewish person in the first century, they're looking at their own history.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So that's part of the reason it's in there too. But also like one of the things you said too, I don't want to miss is it's the faithfulness of God lived out in the prophecies.
Yeah.
So the way that we're able to see that is the prophecies that are fulfilled. So the lineage, especially in the New Testament that leads to Jesus, where it starts off like in the book of Matthew or whatever, we get to see prophecy fulfilled.
Yeah.
And that anything that's predicted 600 years before it happens in such detail, probably should take notice of what it is. And
And I think, I mean, we can all be honest, reading through those is not easy. usually feel less intelligent when I can't pronounce 75% of the names, or I'm like, oh man. Or I'll go through the genealogies and I'll go, okay, oh, I recognize him. Oh, I recognize her. But then there'll always be those stretches of you're like, oh, who is that? Who is that?
Yeah.
And so I think it's something to be aware of. I don't think it's something we need to memorize today.
Yeah.
You can if that's your jam. But you know, if I can pronounce half of them, I'm like stoked.
Yeah, definitely not something you need to be able to be like, I memorized the genealogy of, you know, the history of Israel or whatever. Yeah. Like you don't need to. I had to do stuff like that in college when I was taking Bible classes, like timelines. Mm-hmm. So I could fill out a timeline from creation all the way through to like Jesus and like plot the kings on the timeline.
Yeah, okay.
Which is crazy because, you know, when the Israelites are, we want to be like everyone else. We want a king. Yeah. We know Saul. We know David. Mm-hmm. Then it gets wild and there's like a bunch of them.
You
know? And so anyway, not necessarily information you need to know. However, really good to know why it's there and why it's important, because it highlights God's faithfulness and highlights his forgiveness and grace, man, big time.
Yeah, yeah, big time.
So that's good. Julia, thank you so much for submitting that question. Let's hop into the weekend.
Okay.
Great message this weekend.
Thanks, bud.
So not only was it one of those messages where like, showed us the history and understanding what Jesus is trying to tell them and like the context of what people would understand, but how it applies to us. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can read this parable and not feel convicted in some way.
Yeah.
Right? This idea of this Pharisee who's praying in such a prideful way that it almost seems like a joke, but then you look at it and go, man, I've done that.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe I haven't stood in a big public place and set like prayed to myself, like some of those translations say, but like, man, how often are my prayers just about pride and me, and in contrast to the humility that we see through the tax collector?
Yeah. I think in the Pharisee, like, it's over the top obvious. I think the real trick with pride is it's like, it's just so sneaky on so many levels. Like I was talking to David about this earlier, but we think of pride as standing on a chair and like being boisterous, like, oh, I'm so amazing, I'm so great. And that is, that's like the most obvious pride, but there are layers upon layers of how like pride shows up. And I think really it's the root of all sin. Like you could, once you get past a layer or two of whatever that sin is, anger or resentment or unforgiveness, like, you can boil them almost all down to pride.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, hopefully this parable gets us to look at ourselves and go, okay, yeah, that Pharisee was obviously super prideful. I mean, we could all say, well, I'm not praying to myself about myself, but a lot of our actions through the day would indicate like, actually we are fully dependent on ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, and assuming how things are going to turn out, like where we have more control than we do. So I think that's the layer, like, I think God continuously shows me that, like, man, I do struggle with pride, you know, and it shows up in a variety of ways. And I'm just thankful that we have this God that is patient and the Holy Spirit that is gentle. And if you've gotten yourself to a place with them, like, you can pick up just little telltale signs. I remember before I became a pastor, Pastor Bob was like, hey, I see you becoming a pastor, and like, I think it's going to happen really soon. And I remember when he said it, my chest, just a half inch, was like, oh, I'm going to be a pastor.
Right.
But it was very subtle. I mean, it was so subtle, I barely recognized it. And like, I went home and I remember repenting before God, and I was like, God, do not let me become a pastor until it has no life in it.
Right.
I think I became a pastor like 4 years later.
So it took a while. God had to break some stuff.
And when it finally happened and they were like, hey, we see this in you, we want to have you become this at the church. It didn't. My chest didn't puff out at all. And like, God had brought me to a place, but the initial pride was so subtle within me. Like, I'm just thankful the Holy Spirit was like, that just gave you a little life.
Right.
Like, and it shouldn't have. There's no power in that title.
Yeah.
So that was like a real world experience, that it was like that whisper in the cave with Elijah. Like, it wasn't this dynamic showing up of God. It was this still, calm whisper. And I was just like, by the grace of God, in a place to receive that.
Right.
I didn't miss that.
Man, that's so good. And I think we all have stories just like that. You did open your message with a hilarious story of you as a sleepwalker, which was amazing. But you said before that, you know, we all have people in our life that tell the same stories over and over. And you said your dad does that. And you told us a couple of those good ones, which are great. If you have not watched the message, go back. You got to listen to that story. It's so funny. Tell us another story that your dad tells all the time.
Okay. Most of them I can't tell publicly.
Okay.
My dad came from a rough upbringing. His occupation was on a trade floor. And that's like a bunch of, might as well be oil rig guys. Like, it's just a certain group. One that he tells a lot, and I was talking to Piper about this, is it's me again, but what I would used to do is my mom would be doing dishes, and she would look out over through the window at the dish sink, and she would see me at 3 running down the cul-de-sac in my diapers into the woods, and they didn't understand how I was getting out. And I kept getting out of the house, and so they finally kind of like set up and spied on me, and I would climb the headboard of a bed into a windowsill, and then Army Ranger roll out into a sandbox,
which
was like 3 feet down.
Okay.
And then I would take off to go get into the woods. And a lot of stuff like that. They found an air vent where I had like a little kleptomaniac taking my mom's jewelry and clocks and like all these things and just hid them in an air vent.
Wow.
That wasn't screwed in good. And my mom, and I was little, probably like four. And so she never thought to ask me because it's not something you'd steal for any value reason. But they were shiny and it was cool. And she finally like found like a year's worth of stuff.
That's amazing.
Slowly been collecting.
So you were not only a thief, but an escape artist as well.
I know, you know, I give it right back. So yeah, any escape.
You were straight up like, you know, 007 at age four. Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Piper gets all because she's the newest one to the family. You know, we've been married 5 years in July, and so we're going through the whole like cycle of stories. Yeah, so she's re-getting them all right now.
That's awesome, and you're reliving them. Yeah. Well, that's good. See, I knew there were some more good ones in there. That's so good. So also one of the things in your message you talked about was a friendship that kind of dissolved or kind of wasn't what you thought it was. And it went away. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned briefly and you led into another analogy, which was incredible. But what you mentioned was, you know, grieving the loss of that friendship. And I think that that's something people don't necessarily talk about a lot. And so I want to just kind of lean in and ask you, like, what was that process? What did it look like for you to grieve the loss of a friendship?
Mm. Well, I think I would first say the most important thing in a genuine relationship is like, man, have the hard conversations. It's really easy to sweep stuff under the rug or to have this meaningless grace and just say, you know, I'm gonna be grace-filled, and a meaning that you don't have to have a hard conversation or point out any flaws in each other.
Right.
That would be my first piece of advice.
Because that's how the friendship ended up dissolving.
Yeah, yeah.
Or having issues.
I think that's also how friendships that are sustained become healthy, life-giving relationships. But, you know, if I'm being totally transparent, the first half of it, I really only focused on how poorly I thought they were handling it.
Right.
You know, and then you have to come to grips with like, that's really doesn't matter. I have no control over how someone reacts or how someone shares honesty or doesn't, or I just have, that's not my area of responsibility. So after a few days of wallowing and how poorly I thought it was handled, you have to kind of just come to grips of like, okay, this is where we're at. I think it's important, even if the friendship isn't brought back to where it was, we have a responsibility at reconciliation. Mm-hmm. I think God makes that clear. So there were attempts at that. I don't have any malice towards that person at all anymore. One of the things that's been most helpful with difficult people for me is, man, I start praying for that person every day. Mm-hmm. And I mean genuinely praying for them. I think in the beginning when your feelings are hurt and there's emotions, you're just like, well, Lord, I guess I hope he doesn't get sick. Like,
right.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't know how to pray for this guy. but if you're disciplined at it and you're committed to God's goodness, day two, day three, day four, first week, second week, man, the Spirit will do something internally to where you genuinely pray blessings over their children, over their health, their finances. And like the Spirit will get you to a place where like you really want the best for the person.
Yeah.
And now they don't have any real estate in my brain. Like it doesn't matter how they handled it. It doesn't matter my side. None of that matters. It's just, okay, I forgive them. And even though the friendship's not where it was, I can be okay with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good. And to bring it back to even the point of the message too, like there's probably a lot of pride work in yourself that you have to do to get to that point to be able to say what you said over like, man, I'm literally praying for them. Yeah. Even though they wronged you, even though you don't think they handled the situation right, like the pride in yourself that you have to kill to get to there, I think is a huge part of it.
Yeah, and I think you have to, no matter the situation, say, turn it back on yourself and go, what could I have done differently? Like, what can I own in this situation? Because no one is perfect in any situation.
Right.
You could obviously say some are probably more culpable than others, but I have an area I can grow in. I have something I could have handled different. I could have maybe even noticed some flags and like addressed them. And so like there were plenty of areas within that situation I could have handled better. mm-hmm. or differently.
Yeah, and I think we all can within those situations.
But
too,
I think that's what makes it healthy.
Right.
It's like, I'm not going to focus on you. I'm going to focus on me and like where could I have grown in that area?
Yeah. No, that's good. You know, this whole message of pride is one that I have to think that the Holy Spirit convicted people this weekend, right? So somebody was sitting there this weekend hearing this message on pride and going, man, the realization for me is that I have been allowing pride to be in the driver's seat. What do they do now? So if somebody's listening right now that's going, yeah, I realized that. How do I move forward? How do I change that? Like, I feel like sometimes it gets so ingrained that you can recognize that you have pride, but how do you fix it? And what's somebody who had that realization this weekend, what do they do now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a scientific formula for it. You know what I mean? I think the first thing, if you did recognize it, is you repent. I think acknowledging, man, God, I don't have anything apart from you. So that repentant piece, which we've talked about before, is like, that's a change of your thinking. And then from there, man, like, I'm not trying to simplify it. You pray, God, search my heart and know my thoughts. Like, point out these things, invite them into the day. Like, what is it? Brother Lawrence wrote a book, this monk, and he was like, man, whenever I'm going through my day and I realize some hours have passed and I really haven't thought about God at all, he goes, I don't beat myself up. I just, in that moment of realization, invite him back in. And like, and I think it's just a constant sensitivity to like, where have I been the last 2 hours? Like, and you know, don't get me wrong, stuff gets busy. Life happens, taking care of kids and working. I think though, any moment you realize you haven't thought about God or invited him in today and time has passed, is just acknowledge that without beating yourself up and then invite him into that.
Yeah.
And I think we become more sensitive to his presence.
That's good. I mean, this is random, but this is an unedited podcast, so yeah, this is what we do. I was doing a baseball camp this morning, a baseball clinic for a bunch of kids, and the word of the day was focus. Mm-hmm. And I talked about how in baseball, you have to maintain focus. And then inevitably, there will be times where you are not focused or you lose focus. So the most important part of the word focus when it comes to baseball is the refocus.
Okay.
Right? And having a mechanism or whatever it is to lock back in, because you're going to get distracted, but where's the lock back in piece? Yeah. And when you were talking, that's exactly what I thought of with our faith is like, man, I don't think it's possible because of the fallen nature of our hearts and the world that we live in to not fall into pride, to not fall into, God, I got this, I don't need you. But the refocus, right? The bringing it back and like whatever mechanism it is, whether it's a prayer, whether it's just going like, man, oh, I haven't thought about God, but now I'm bringing him back in. Refocus back in.
Absolutely.
I think that is like the biggest thing that we can do. Which, dude, if I'm honest, that happens. I mean, that's like 20 times a day for me,
right? All the time, like, man. I mean, really.
I was sharing with you earlier, like, I had that realization in the middle of the night last night because I'm praying to God about something and that I really needed. And I'm like, God, I need you. And God was just like, yeah, how come you don't need me every other night? Like, why right now?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shoot, because it's pride where I think I got it unless it's too big for me to handle.
Yeah.
Well, everything should be given to God.
Yeah. You know? And we always have this false sense that we have more control than we do. And so, I mean, really driving to work and drive, we immediately assume we're going to drive back home at the end of the day. Cause I mean, the numbers would support that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We get to do it all the time. But I think you could take that example into everything that we do on a daily basis. And we just have this skewed sense of control in our life that we just don't have, you know what I mean? And it's just so misleading. And I think that's pride, you know, and I struggle with that. God constantly is using my two toddlers right now to show me where I just have this skewed sense of control over how my children are going to turn out or how our marriage is going to look or how the household will be run. And he's constantly just like, I struggle with that. I struggle with it daily, in a variety of ways. So I don't think anyone's immune to these issues.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things you said in your message too is, you know, me, John, yourself, anyone, like, we're player coaches up there, man. Like, we're not presenting any of this stuff because we're like, we figured it all out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, man, this is a constant daily battle and struggle. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. So good. Well, great, great message this weekend. Again, if you have not seen it or listened to it, I would highly encourage you to do that. We wrapped up the collection on the parables. Jesus mm-hmm. is telling these parables, and we are kicking off our summer teaching this next week. And so if you're listening to this before this coming weekend, be there, because we are going to dive into the book of Galatians.
Hey-o.
Book of Galatians. Good. It's going to be awesome. We walk verse by verse through the summer. And so that's what we're going to be doing again this summer. Couple more questions for you. You ready? Right, you good?
Go. Shoot.
Okay, good. All right, here we go. Lynn asked this question.
Lynn.
What does it mean that God is slow to anger? We see that in scriptures. It's talked about, and people even refer to that God is slow to anger. What does that mean?
Well, I think just the fact that Ben Palmer deserves to go to hell, you know, mm-hmm. Todd Jones deserves to go to hell. Mm-hmm. But yet, there's so many that can put their faith in Jesus, and what we deserve doesn't happen. I mean, he's slow to anger as we don't get what we deserve. You can look at the Old Testament and like, man, he's pretty patient with the Israelites, and nothing's changed with us.
But I think that's what we look at too, is the Old Testament. You go, that God was angry sometimes.
Oh man, I see but a patient
man,
God.
We see, yeah, and that's what I think. We don't see what led up to.
Yeah.
I think he was slow to anger.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, there was a lot there. In the same way, like you said, he's slow to anger with us because grace.
Yeah.
The fact that grace exists is that he is slow to anger.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think you can look at the Old Testament and say that, oh man, that's a God of wrath. Like, I see where people get that. But the truth is there's two covenants that God works out of. And one is unshakable and unmovable. It's promises. It's the covenant of Abraham. But then there's also the other one where there is a cause and effect to how we behave.
Right.
And there are consequences to sin. And, you know, in that one is where you see that punishment. They repent and turn. And, you know, it's that cycle throughout that. And so I think that's where people get confused. But there is another one where there's blessings and there's curses. And it's dependent upon our life churches. Now, I'm not talking about salvation.
Right.
That one's the promise that's unshakable. You put your faith in Jesus. And I think that's where people get confused as far as like seeing this angry God or this wrathful God.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, we always say if you haven't had a life that required a lot of grace, it's hard to understand grace. And in the same way, if you haven't had a life that required, maybe not required, but should have made God a lot of, you know, angry, but then you've experienced grace.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite places to experience this is when you see anyone that has gone through recovery.
Yeah.
They are just like, man, let me tell you how many times God could have been angry with me, but 100%. Instead I'm saved. And
I think that's why you see so much fruit through that. But I literally can think of my addiction and how, after being saved and where God has me, I can look through those 20 years of addiction. And I can point out multiple times God was shaping me and teaching me lessons and even teaching me skill sets and to prepare me for this. And I couldn't have been more disobedient or farther from God or, you know. And so like anyone from addiction cannot help but see like how slow God is to anger.
Yeah.
And even like loving you and carrying you through that. You know what I mean? And so... Yeah, the recovery, the fruit that comes out of a recovery ministry is like the best.
So good.
Because there's no misunderstanding, you know? Like they know where they were, like in the muck and mire and darkness. And so there's like no sense of self-righteousness. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe I know Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say, you know, just the short answer for that, what does it mean that God is slow to anger is it's the grace that he shows. Like that's what it means, is that he shows us grace because he doesn't have to show grace.
Yeah.
He could just snap his fingers. You know, I mean, the God who spoke the universe into existence could also speak it out of the existence.
Yeah.
And so God is slow to anger in that. And that's good. Good news for you. Good news for me.
Absolutely.
So that's good stuff. Yeah. Hopefully that answers that in a quick way. And you know, maybe there's follow-up questions, which, if you have follow-up questions on that, let us know, because I think a lot of times this is a rabbit trail we don't need to go down, because if people have follow-up questions, they can ask. Yeah. But the idea of anger itself, a lot of times, is seen in, is like, man, this is so bad. But Jesus himself got angry as he turned over the tables and all that.
Absolutely.
So there's righteous anger and all that, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think God being slow to anger is just the evidence by his grace.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, next question. Last question that we have for us today as we wrap up. Comes in from Anonymous, and Anonymous asks this: is it okay to doubt your faith sometimes? And what should someone do when they're in that place?
Yeah, I think it's not coincidental that the best example of doubt was John the Baptist. Literally baptizes Jesus, hears the voice of God, sees the Spirit descend on Jesus, sees all this with his own eyes, and hears it all with his own ears. Circumstances start to shift. He gets arrested. He's in prison. Tough circumstances.
Right.
And then he says, hey, two of my guys, come here. I need you to go ask Jesus, hey, are you really the one? Or should we expect someone else?
No, it's the next guy that heaven opened up for.
Know? But I mean, man, Jesus called John the Baptist the greatest man ever born of a natural birth. Okay, so it happens. Like, and our circumstances affect us. I talked about it a little this weekend. Like, just like putting ourselves in the apostles' shoes of, I can't imagine watching your king, the king, dying on the cross and knowing he was God, and like how that had to have messed with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, beaten and tortured. Isaiah 53 says he was beaten so bad he didn't even have the appearance of a man. Like, he was so brutally tortured. I think it's a part of our journey. You know, I really do. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think you can stay there. But to give us the example of John the Baptist, our circumstances affect us.
Mm-hmm.
They just do.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of other examples in scripture too, of people that doubted and, you know, or just didn't trust or whatever, you know. And I think the people that had seen bigger and better works than what we have, you know what I mean? Like you just said, John the Baptist literally saw a voice from, or heard a voice from heaven and saw the dove descend on Jesus and then doubted. For most of us, we haven't seen those kind of things. Yeah. We have evidence of life change, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Definitely, those are things we can look at. We haven't seen these massive miracles that some people saw firsthand in Jesus and still doubted. So yes, doubt is going to be natural when it comes to our faith. Man, I got to be, I mean, I doubt all the time, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Like, if I got to be honest with you, I'm going to tell you, there are times where life gets so difficult that I go, God, where are you at?
Yeah.
Are you even going to show up? Now, I will say he's never not shown up.
Yeah.
But in those moments, sometimes life overwhelms and I doubt. And I think the doubt is natural. It's going to happen. But I think, again, it's what comes through that doubt. Because there's, I think, a positive and a healthy way to doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a negative way to doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to us a little bit about what maybe the negative way would be, okay, God, I doubt. I'm running away.
Yeah.
I'm going to get around a bunch of other people that are going to bring me down and also, you know, maybe agree with my doubts and, and keep going down.
Yeah, that's
negative. Talk to me a little about what is a healthy way to doubt look like?
Yeah, I'll share just in my experience. A lot of times, if I'm being honest, like God feels distant. You know, like I want to hear him more. I want to feel his presence more. And I'll have these stretches where I just feel like he's distant. And, you know, and doubt will start to creep in. And I just go back to, what does his word say? How does his word handle it?
Mm-hmm.
And his word handles it by lamenting. It handles it by acknowledging your emotion before God. There's no point in trying to act hyper-spiritual and use these phrases and words that are true, but you're not really acknowledging how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. So meaning like, oh, God's always with you. You know, everything's meant for good. Yeah, those are all true, but you just went through a really hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's go before the Creator, who already knows how we're feeling, and like acknowledge that. And I tell God, hey, man, you feel distant, Lord. Like, I feel like I can't feel you. You don't feel close. But I know your word says you're never far.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that but is the rule of but. Both things can be true. What's said before but and what's said after. But the reason someone says something is because this after but is your real point. So example would be,
David, are we going to have to put an E on this one because he keeps saying but? Yeah, like this is explicit one T. over here?
Just
this
one
is,
T.
Yeah. Gee.
You say, I like Jimmy, but man, he talks a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, you might really like Jimmy, but the reason you said that sentence was so you could tell people
so you could say the other part, right?
So both can be true. The first one, though, is just kind of window dressing. And then your real point for the sentence is after but. It's called the rule of but.
Yeah.
And so I use that within my walk with God.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you feel distant. That feels true. But I know it's not because mm-hmm. your word says these things about you. And you're unshakable and unmovable. And so I use that regularly. But I want to go before him and share how I'm feeling. Like,
yeah,
be honest about it. But land on the truth of his word, was which does not shift like sand. It does not change like a shadow. So I'm going to focus on his truth mm-hmm. while acknowledging my how fragile I am.
Yeah, so doubt is a opinion and feeling,
yeah.
a human opinion and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is eternal.
Yeah.
So having that, I would say, just like what you said, that is probably the first step is identifying this is a human feeling and emotion and you know, this is what I'm thinking. This is true.
Yeah.
And then, so there's that. And then I think the other part is in doubt. Sometimes we isolate where being in community is so important yeah. because not, I don't know that I have got to a point where I'm like deeply doubting my faith. I've had doubts in my faith, yeah, but yeah. not a deep doubt of my faith. However, often I have doubts of my calling.
Yeah.
And that's where you and the beard and other people in my life have said things that have reaffirmed God's calling in my life yeah. or have refreshed it or have been yeah. like, hey, here's what I see in you where I'm going, oh man, I was just doubting that. But now, you know, God used you guys in my life, which wouldn't have happened if I had removed myself from community. So yeah. I think having people in your life and putting yourself in a place where people can speak truth to you and speak life to you really helps with those doubts in those moments.
Well, even within this exchange, like, being vulnerable and honest of saying, like, man, it happens a lot for me. And, like, don't shortchange the health and benefits that come from that transparency. Mm-hmm. And what stops us is the enemy goes, oh, whoa, 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 don't share that.
Right.
Like, there, you'll get judged for that.
Yep.
That will be a problem. We have to be able to talk to people and say, man, this is how I feel with the Lord right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't see it. And you nailed it. Like, what? The unhealthy way is going to a group that will just co-sign that.
Yeah.
And just say, man, look, you live your life. Like yeah. you be you. You know what I'm saying? You make yourself happy with your decision.
Worst advice ever.
Worst advice ever. Don't go to that.
Don't do that. No, that's good. And thank you, whoever wrote this question, and thank you too, because that's vulnerable even asking that. So
yeah.
I would say to anybody listening right now, if you have a question that you're going, I don't know if I can ask that, go ahead, ask it. We would love to answer it. Doesn't have to have your name attached to it. It can be anonymous, but please continue to send in your questions. Anything that you have, we would love to answer. You can submit those unedited at heightschurch.com. Email us those. We'd also love for you to rate, review, and share the show with somebody. And if you've made it this far, you're a part of the End of the Podcast Club. There it is. End of the Podcast Club. You are a special, special part of this show. We don't have anything to
You're
give
special.
Them. So I know. I just, thank you. That was a very special moment for me there. We don't have anything for them. And it's starting to feel like I've made up this club now. Like it's not a real thing, you know? The End of the Podcast Club.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. The folks that have stuck around this far. So we still got the merch before John comes back. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still going.
Is the beard? Beard's giving you a little,
yeah,
a
he's
little shot.
I know. We must be running out of time because he's a little, wow.
He's
all right.
Fussy.
We gotta wrap this up, folks, because the beard is over there just being cranky as can be. So,
I want some merch, though, if it comes around.
If it comes around, we will all give right. you some
unedited?
Merch. Unedited merch. We'll see.
Get that quality t-shirt, okay?
It'll be
Don't
quality.
Don't save money on the quality of the shirt.
All right. Final okay. thought for you guys today is this. We live in a world that yields to our pride. Mm. It feeds into it. We are always getting pride boosted into us, but we constantly have to stop, refocus, call out the pride in ourselves and refocus on Jesus. Amen. We need to depend on him, not on ourselves. Love you guys so much. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.